This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, Michael Gibson is joined by Dr. Sanjiv Shah, professor of medicine at the Feinberg School of Medicine of the Northwestern University in Chicago, Illinois. They cover transcatheter interatrial shunt devices for the treatment of heart failure, the reduced lap HF1.
Sanjiv, so often we're trying to plug up holes in the heart, but you're doing the opposite. You're putting a shunt in. Why is that?
Well, it's a great question. I think when people first hear about it, they have that same question and they say, why would you ever even think about doing that? And I think one thing we know about heart failure, especially heart failure with preserved ejection fraction or relatively preserved ejection fraction, is that the sine qua non of the syndrome is that the left atrial pressure is increased either at rest and or with exertion. And so even though HFpEF is a heterogeneous syndrome, wouldn't it be great if we could lower that left atrial pressure? And it just so happens that there is a congenital syndrome that's associated with rheumatic mitral stenosis that gave us a hint that this might work by putting a hole in the intratral septum. So Luttenbacher syndrome was described decades ago, and what it is basically in patients with rheumatic mitral stenosis, those with a congenital atrial septal defect actually are found to do better because they sort of have a pop-off valve, basically a reservoir for all that built-up left atrial pressure. And so the concept was, what if we did this iatrogenically? We put an intratral shunt in to decompress the left atrium in these heart failure patients. And so first there was an 11-patient pilot study, and then a bigger 64-patient open-label, non-randomized trial. And the evidence that we got from these things was that, hey, maybe this works. Maybe by lowering the left atrial pressure in this way, patients feel better. The wedge pressure goes down, the left atrial pressure goes down, and they're not developing right-sided heart failure. But without a randomized control trial, we really can't make that conclusion definite.
And to be clear, these weren't patients with mitral stenosis. You're looking at people who have HFpEF, is that right?
Yeah, so valvular heart disease was a major exclusion criteria for this trial. We really wanted to look at garden variety HFpEF patients, the kinds that have obesity, hypertension, diabetes, coronary artery disease, et cetera, and patients with restrictive cardiomyopathies, infiltrative heart disease, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. We excluded all of those patients. And so this is meant to be a treatment for the patients we see in clinic every day with HFpEF.
And you look carefully to make sure they didn't already have right heart failure, correct?
Yeah, I like to call this reduce LAP HF1 trial an enrichment trial in the sense that with pharmacological agents, we're always trying to, you know, figure out the mechanism and target the right patients. Well, here we have a device. We know how the device works. We know the mechanism. And so we have a way of targeting patients, enriching the trial with the right patients. So there's clear exclusion criteria to make sure that we don't include patients with right-sided heart failure with elevated right atrial pressure. We want to see that they have a wedge pressure that definitely goes up with exercise, and they have a gradient between their wedge pressure, or left atrial pressure, and their right atrial pressure, so they'll benefit from the device.
So it's all the rage now to do sham-controlled procedures. So was this sham-controlled?
It was. This was a 44-patient trial, so 22 in each arm. And after patients got past the non-invasive screening, so they got an echo to make sure they had the right phenotype of HFpEF, then they got invasive screening to make sure they had the right hemodynamics, and that invasive screening was with exercise, right heart cath. At that point, they were randomized, and either they got both a femoral access with intracardiac echocardiography or transesophageal echocardiography, and then the intratracheal shunt device or the sham was just femoral venous access with ICE visualization of the intratracheal septum in the left atrium.
And were the patients, did they have headphones on at that phase and they didn't know what was going on?
Exactly. They had headphones, blindfolded, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the heart failure physician taking care of the patient, anyone that was actually taking care of the patient clinically, was also blinded.
Mm-hmm. What was your primary endpoint and what did you find?
So the primary endpoint was exercise pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, so accounting for all stages of exercise achieved. And we were able to do that with a mixed repeated measures model. And with that, we did find that it lowered pulmonary capillary wedge pressure with a p-value of 0.0028. And so it did meet its primary endpoint. Furthermore, we did see that the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure with legs up, so that's a passive preload increasing maneuver, and also at the 20-watt first stage of exercise, both were significantly lower in these patients. I think that in later stages, we didn't see a significant difference because not as many patients could achieve those later stages. But I think the totality of the data made us feel good that this really has a positive mechanistic effect.
And this was a month out from the initial index procedure.
Exactly. Yeah. So we repeated that right heart cath with exercise at 1 month.
Sure. Well, very encouraging. So what's your next step?
So we've already embarked on the next phase of this, which is a phase 3 pivotal trial. There are going to be up to 500 patients. It's a worldwide trial, and we're really excited about it. And that trial is really going to have some hard endpoints, like heart failure hospitalization, KCCQ score for quality of life, and a 6-minute walk test.
When will that be complete? Do you know?
It's hard to say right now, but I think the trial just started this year. So I think we're looking to at least 2020 probably, so quite some time.
And what's the primary endpoint? You mentioned several.
Yeah, so the primary endpoint is a hierarchical endpoint. So as it stands now, it's going to be KCCQ as the primary, and that's in a hierarchical order. And so that'll be really what's driving the power calculations.
So if you hit on that, you go to your next endpoint, you hit on that, you
exactly.
go to your next endpoint.
Yeah.
And the FDA is going to approve the device based upon that kind of questionnaire.
Well, you know, we can't predict what the FDA is going to do, but we have had meetings with them, and I think that they are very understanding that in HFpEF, elderly patients, quality of life is probably more important to many than quantity of life.
Well, that'd be a big step to have a device approved based upon a patient quality of life questionnaire.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, congratulations, and we look forward to learning more from you, Dr. Shah, on this very, very exciting procedure.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.